28.
Thank you, Rob. Page 139. No, don't forget yourself. All right, on Wednesday, we covered chapter 27, which is the start of the journey to Rome. These last several chapters in Acts have been leading up to this story, especially since Paul has been in... He came back to Jerusalem following his third journey, and then those events led him to Caesarea, and we covered that. And then, of course, that's where we know where he made his... I won't say he was forced to make his appeal, but he did invoke his rights as a citizen and appealed to Caesar because of the baseless charges against him from the Jews. And so when he did that, of course, we know that set in motion these events. Then we covered the three addresses he made before governors or Roman officials, Felix, Festus, and Agrippa. And we then covered the first half of chapter 27. The first half of this story, which is chapter 27, on Wednesday night. All right, they get to land, and where are they now? What's the name of the island? All right, this is how the chapter begins, chapter 28, verse 1. And when they had been brought safely through, then we found out that the island was called Malta, or Melita, some versions or maps will say. I did not ask this question on the outline, but it's the first point on the chart. How many shipwrecks does this make for Paul? I don't mean this to be a trick question, but do we know? It's at least a four. And we know that why. There could be more than that, but we know it's at least four. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, which he had already written, and at verse 25 he said, three times I've been shipwrecked. All right, that happened before this, that he wrote that. So we don't know where, we don't know under what circumstances those others happened, but Paul does mention there. So this is at least the fourth time that Paul has been a castaway or stuck on an island somewhere, shipwrecked. All that he did for the cause of Christ illuminated in that great passage there. All right, reaching shore, we learned that, or they say we learned where we were. It was Melita or Malta. And what do you know about Malta? If you were doing any research, how big is Malta? If you look at a map, it's a little bitty dot out there in the middle of the ocean. Seems like. What I could tell, it was a small island southwest of Italy. Approximately the research data I had, it was 18 miles long and only 8 miles wide. So that's 144 square miles of land. That's about it. And that's where they are. And in verse 2, how did Luke record they were treated? Once all the 276, and remember we said Wednesday night, Paul said more than once, everybody here is going to make it alive. We're going to lose the ship, and they did, but no, there'll be no loss of life. So when the 276 get to land, how were they treated by the natives? My version says, verse 2. Very kind. That's right. This version says they showed us extraordinary kindness. A cold rain had set in, and so what did they do? Well, they built a fire. And they received us all into that very hospitable situation. So the natives displayed great kindness, and they built a fire and allowed the castaways to warm themselves. I'm sure that was a very great relief for these people who had been through this terrible event to get to land. Well, the fact that the fire is there, that led to something that Paul did. What did Paul involve himself in? Well, he's gathering wood, like anybody would, to help keep the fire going. And how did that turn out? All right, it says that a viper was, whether he just gathered up a bundle and inside the armful of wood was this viper hidden amongst the wood, which snakes do, of course, we know. And this says that the it's in verse 3, that fastened onto his hand. So it just bit him and just hung right there. Well, what did Paul do? No thought at all. Just shook it off and it fell into the fire. As you see there in verse 4. And what happened because of that? And this gives us an inclination about the natives. All right. They said, well, here's a man that's obviously guilty. He survived the ordeal on the seas. That didn't do him in. But the gods or whoever it is that they believed in said, well, he's not going to escape. This snake is obviously, or this viper is obviously, a means of judgment against this man. No doubt it was a poisonous snake. It wasn't this little old gardener snake. I mean, it was a poisonous snake. And they just thought Paul was going to do what? He's just going to drop over dead. And so everybody's watching him. Well, what happens? Nothing happens. Paul doesn't fall over dead from the venom. He's not hurt at all. And this is in verse 6. Expecting him to about to swell up or suddenly fall down dead, they waited a long time and saw that nothing unusual happened. Well, then what do they think? Well, he's a god. So they've gone from one extreme to the other. First they say, well, he's guilty and all, but now he's not falling down dead, so he must be a god. So we see this superstitious, very superstitious behavior on these island dwellers, these natives. And has Paul been accused of being a god before? He's been through this once before. Remember when he and Barnabas, on the first journey, they were given the names Hermes and Zeus by those in Antioch, Pisidia, and the lower parts of that region. So this isn't nothing new for Paul, that he's had to undergo this kind of behavior before. Well, now they're on the island, of course, and we get through with that little event. And in verse 7, we are made mention of someone else. Who does Luke mention to us? All right, Publius, he was the chief man or the leading man of the island. Whether that means he was placed there by the Roman government to keep order, or he was the wealthiest man of the island, whatever that may lead us to believe one way or the other. But he's a man of great prominence. I think we can all agree on that. But he welcomed the castaways. Namely, I think we're limiting ourselves here primarily to Paul and his inner circle of companions. He welcomed us and treated us very courteously for how long? Right? He was hospitable at least for 3 days. So he's showing some kindness also to Paul and his companions. Well, as Paul meets him and comes in contact with him, what natural thing happens? What does Paul learn? All right, Publius' father is laying sick on the bed, and so Paul, being an apostle like he is, what does he do? Goes in and lays hands on him and he heals him. And that's not the first time he's ever done that before either. So Paul's not acting out of character here. He's done this kind of thing before. Well, what do you think that's going to do to an island full of people who have already shown themselves to be very superstitious? And they see Paul do this. Yeah? Well, in fact, what do they do? Obviously, the news gets out. Hey, Paul healed Publius, his father. So what do people start doing? All right. Everybody's got a sick loved one. Let's go see this man. So Paul gets inundated with requests to heal. Verse 9, after this happened, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases, if they were themselves diseased or someone in their family would get away, of course, and they came to him and they were getting cured, getting healed. Paul was being very attentive to those needs. Well, so now Paul is doing that, and that leads us then to what other event in verse 10? What happened as a result of him doing this? Yeah. I mean, they got treated really well because of what Paul was doing. They also honored us with many marks of respect, my version says. And when we were setting sail, of course they've not done it yet, because look at verse 11, how long were they on Malta? Well, they spent the month. They wintered there for those 3 months. But they were already starting to give them provisions for the journey that would happen at the end of the stay there. So they supplied us with all that we needed. So here we see Paul being a thoughtful disciple. Human behavior being what it is. Somebody has been through that kind of an ordeal. I've been on an ocean liner, but we didn't go through a storm. I don't know what that feels like. But I'm sure that was quite harrowing. But human nature as it is, somebody goes through that kind of an ordeal and makes it out alive, then typically, what do they want for themselves after they go through that? Maybe to be left alone for a while? That's not Paul, though. He's just going about his business. God had promised him he's going to go to Rome. God never made one mention about being shipwrecked on an island. But that's just how it's worked out. And so maybe there's a small lesson here for us. Wherever we find ourselves, in whatever condition we find ourselves in or situation, how do we need to conduct ourselves? Always the same. That's right. Being thoughtful of other people. It doesn't say anything in the first 11 verses that I can see that Paul did any preaching. But do you suppose that he did? Wouldn't surprise me if he did. Maybe try to do some teaching. Here were some superstitious people. So again, I'm not trying to read too much into the text or put things in there that's not in there, but knowing Paul's character like we do, we can see Paul certainly would have spent the 3 months while he was there involved in those kinds of very important activities. And he does heal Publius' father and others. And as a result, they were treated very kindly. So through the end of question 3, everyone that's been on this ship that has suffered the same fate as Paul, it worked out for their betterment too because of how Paul was conducting himself on the island. They were all given ample supplies for the journey that lay ahead of them. Okay, anything anybody has a question or comment wise through verse 10 before we go to the next aspect of it? Yes, Norm. Yes. Yes. That's a good point. Other people in the Bible have been accused of, because they have great calamities in their life, well, you must be guilty of some sin. You mentioned Job. The disciples did ask Jesus that time with the man that he healed that was blind. Who sinned, this man or his parents? And so people did typically think those kinds of things, and that's a good observation to make. Well, yes. Folks still think the same thing. Why is God doing this to me? Those kinds of thoughts certainly are unwarranted. That's a good connection to make, Norm. Anybody else? Okay. Well, that is the story on Malta. And so, at the end of 3 months, this now takes us to verse 11. What kind of ship was it that brought them to Malta? Excuse me, what kind of ship was it? Well, I shouldn't say that brought them, but what kind of ship were they on when they got to Malta? It was an Alexandrian ship, remember, that broke apart. Well, what else is here at the island? It's another one. So that tells us this was a constant route, if you will, and Malta apparently was a place where ships could winter. This one did. And so there was room on this ship. We have just a bit of information in verse 11. It had the twin brothers on its figurehead. These were supposedly the twin sons of Zeus. So again, you see sailors in the first century, they were all, well, I shouldn't say all, but it was commonly known that they were superstitious themselves and being given to the Roman gods and so forth, or the Greek gods, either way. They had these figures on the ship themselves. So they boarded another Alexandrian ship that had spent the winter on Malta. And now Luke will pick up the the chronicle, if you will, of the route that's taken from this small island that's just southwest of Sicily, which is southwest of off the boot of Italy. So they're going to be heading that way. So they came to Syracuse, that's on Sicily, and from there they sailed to Rhegium, that's in verse 13. And I'm not Italian, so I can't say these names probably correctly. But you see also at the end of verse 13, the second day, when they caught the south wind off of Syracuse, they came to Puteoli. Those were places that are on Italy. So let's get our map out again. Here we are, of course. There's Malta right there. There's a small island. So from there they sailed to Syracuse, and then leaving the island of Sicily through that narrow strait that's between Sicily and the boot of Italy, and they finally reached the landmass of Italy. That's the place right there that we tried to probably butcher the name, but that's where they came. Takes us through the end of verse 13. Now, when Paul finally made it to Italy, as Luke writes for us now, what did he do? By the way, how long were they there at Puteoli? 7 days or a week. When he got there, what did Paul do? He found some brethren. Now, had Paul been to Italy before? No indication. We've already surveyed the book of Romans. That's been a little while ago, and we'll bring up a passage from the first chapter just in a few moments. In fact, I think I've got it written in one of the questions. But even though Paul has not been there, there is an establishment of the churches there. We don't know who it was that started those churches, and that's not really important anyway. But there are brethren at this place. And you'll see in verse 14. And there, at this place, we found some brethren and invited to stay with them for 7 days. Priscilla and Aquila, yes, had been expelled from Rome, but I don't think they were Christians until they met Paul. Now, that's just one observation. Maybe they were already disciples, but some have taken the view. When you go back to, that's a good point to bring up, Freddie. You go back to Acts chapter 18, when he met them in Corinth, what they had in common, some take the view, was not they were all disciples, but they were just tent makers together and that Paul taught them. Certainly we know that they were Christians after that, but I don't know if they were already disciples or not. But whoever it was that had made it to Italy had established some churches, and there were disciples or there were brethren that were there. All right, so now leaving our map, let's get back to our chart here. He stayed there 7 days, the first part of verse 14. And now the final leg to Rome begins. And let's stop here just for a moment and let's try to put ourselves in Paul's mind. He had already expressed a desire to go to Rome. We've seen passages that indicate that. Again, what had the Lord told him? All right, as you have witnessed for me here in Jerusalem, you will also, or in Caesarea, you will also witness for me at Rome. So he had been told. So there was never any doubt that Paul was going to go to Rome. The thing that hasn't worked out, probably like Paul thought, was how he was going to get there. No doubt Paul thought he would go there as a free evangelist, able to roam about and be about the business of preaching and teaching without having any kind of restrictions or limitations. Who is always at his side now, where we are right now? There's a soldier that's guarding him. He is not free. He's a prisoner, along with all the other prisoners who are on this ship. So that tells us something. You know, when we see the Lord giving us instructions, of course, the Lord's not going to talk to us like He talked to Paul, but we still know the Lord still does teach us through His Word. Many times the Lord doesn't tell us how things work out, does He? Just that this is what you need to do, but a lot of the small details are left out. And so how do you get through the unknown? Especially if it works out with difficulty like this. How do you get through those moments? All you got is faith. That's right. You'll trust God that it'll work out. Maybe it didn't work out like you thought it would, but it'll work out. And I think we'll see that more so when we come to these epistles that we've just handed out, the first three. I didn't hand out Philippians, and that of the four we've got left to cover, that one has statements in it that really makes that point the most as compared to Ephesians, Colossians, and Philemon. How that Paul would later write, things have actually worked out for the furtherance of the gospel, even though he is a prisoner and in chains in Rome. So Paul is now going to finally begin this last leg to Rome. Yes, Charles, go ahead. Yes. And those brethren went back to Rome then and talked. Yeah, that's a good point. In Acts 2, when there were Jews from all nations under heaven and they heard the gospel first preached, those places that are listed, it's quite probable, and I think that's probably a good textual clue for us, that some of those went back to Rome and maybe they were the ones, and quite likely were the ones that started the church. Without having an apostle do it, but having just brethren do it. Okay, so now that Paul is finally on the landmass of Italy, he's actually there now. In verse 15, the brethren, it says, and the brethren, when they heard about us, came from there. Now, which brethren is this? Well, go. Yes, look at the end of verse 14, because Luke writes, when he says that they stayed there at Puteoli 7 days, and thus we came to Rome. Well, they're not quite in Rome yet. I think that's just meaning we started to make the final leg to Rome. And then the way verse 15 begins, and the brethren, when they came from there, that would be Rome. So Roman brethren heard that Paul was a little farther south down the way from them. And so they're starting to come north from where they were. Right, of course, right there is where they are. And Luke writes that they came from what two places? All right, Appius Forum or Appii Forum. That's that place right there. And that's some 43 miles from Rome, roughly. And also one other place. Three inns or three taverns. And that's just 10 miles up the road closer to Rome from Appii Forum. So the way I think this needs to be interpreted is that as they're on the way, some brethren come to him from Appii Forum and some other brethren come to him from three inns or three taverns. So they're coming to Paul. As they're journeying up, they come down to meet him, and the way I understand this, they're just going to escort him on this last little leg into the city of Rome. Paul kind of meets them on the way, and they come to be with him. Now, these are the brethren from Rome that Paul has written to. Remember, we looked through in Acts 18 is where we get the idea. Excuse me, not Acts 18, Acts 20, where Paul wrote the Roman letter from Corinth. And they have had it now for a little while. And so they hear Paul's just down the road a little. Paul's just down the way a little bit. So they go to meet him. And as we see here, I think this is in question. I didn't put it in the question. I'm looking at question. Yes, I did. Question 5, top of page 140. I want you to turn to Romans chapter 1. We're going to look at a passage just in a second. That should just be the next page over in your Bible since we're at the end of Acts. Romans chapter 1. We're going to read a few verses and see if we can connect what Paul wrote there to what's happening here at the last part of Acts 28 when they come to meet him on the road or on the way up to Rome. So, at last, Paul finally meets these Christians. And he didn't meet them in the city of Rome. He doesn't come to them as a free evangelist. He's still being escorted by this prisoner, by this guard. He's a prisoner. But look at some of the things that he wrote. Trent, would you read for us now in Romans 1, please read verses 8 through 13, and we'll make a few comments. Thank you. All right, here are the thoughts of Paul himself. He said, I have often wanted to come to you and to see you, to impart some spiritual gift to you. And I'm sure when Paul wrote this, of course, being inspired, it was the Holy Spirit writing this, but Paul having his own human thoughts, the way he's got this phrase, most likely thought that he just would go there as he'd gone other places as a traveling apostle and evangelist. And he would come to the city and start to work and teach in the city and try to convert people. But he doesn't meet them that way. He meets them now under these conditions. But they, no doubt, we know they love him. Because, well, how do we know they love him? They went out to meet him. They didn't have a car. Most likely didn't have their own chariot. So they were willing to travel some 30 or 40 miles to go meet the apostle and come right back up to Rome. That tells you what they thought of him. They loved him. And especially again since they had received his letter previously and how he had expressed his love for them. So, I don't know how they got word. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe one of his companions, maybe the brethren where he was, sent word to the brethren at Rome. But how were they got informed? And they were willing. What kind of things are you or I willing to walk 30 or 40 miles for? Well, that's a good question. and then turn around and make the same trip back up. Someone could say, well, he's coming up here, let's just wait for him to get here. No, they wanted to go be with him. And to travel with him, to talk with him, and walk with him. I tell you, that to me, that shows that they really loved this man. And were so glad that he finally now was in Rome. And they showed that with just a simple gesture of going to him, seeing him for the first time, and then accompanying him or escorting him back up on the trip to the city of Rome. So, Paul finally has made it to Rome. He is there. And that is where the book will conclude. With Paul being in the very capital of the known world, civilized world. Okay, we're through with our map. Now, as Luke writes, once Paul gets there, what provisions were made for him by the centurion? Verse 16. Okay. All right. My version says he was allowed to stay in his own rented quarters. Well, a house if he would rent it. Well, that's toward the end, verse 30, I'm sorry. But he was going to stay by himself with the soldier. And so Paul sets up his place to stay, if you will. Now, 3 days later, what happens? Kind of get his legs under him, get settled in his house. Then 3 days later, what happens? All right, the leading Jews come to him. This is verses 17 through 20. Paul summons them. Does he send for them? Yeah, he called together those who were the leading men of the Jews. And when they come together, what did Paul want to talk to them about? Why did he send for them? Pardon, Albert? All right. He wants to know what they know. And so what kind of thing? Yes, just 1 second. What kind of things does Paul say to them as he begins to talk about? What's he describe? All right, these things happened. He mentions that in verse 17. Yeah. I've done nothing against our people. He mentions Jerusalem. I was delivered into the hands of the Romans. They examined me. Verse 18. They were willing to release me, but the Jews objected, and the Romans kind of caved into that political pressure. That's verse 19. And so I was forced to appeal to Caesar. And that's how I've wound up here. So Paul just wants to know what they maybe have heard about him. So that's why he sends for the Jews. Yes, sir? Yes. slander and all that. Yes, right, right, right. Yes, good observation. And all the other journeys, as he makes mentions, the Jews chased him from one place to the other. This time Paul sends for them. They're not there to accuse him right in his face. He wants to know what they've heard. So he kind of just gives a very brief, very short little summary of the events that have brought him to Rome. Well, what did they say when Paul went through this little history? We haven't heard of any of this. No one's told us about this at all. This is really news to us, but what? We'd like to hear this story. So we could use the words here, and here's what I should have clicked a moment ago. How he was apprehended by the Jews from Judea, how he should have been freed, but his appeal had brought him to Rome. And then he says, he once again mentions something. I did want to go over this. Look at the end of verse 20. He says, "For this reason, therefore, I requested to see you and to speak with you, for I am wearing this chain." Why? "For the sake of the hope of Israel." Where have we heard this hope before? In the last few chapters. Look at all the places Paul has mentioned. Remember, "I am on trial for the hope of Israel, for the hope of the resurrection of the dead." Paul is hammering this theme of hope again in his preaching and in his witnessing for Christ as an apostle. So again, without fail, Paul mentions the hope. He's not letting go of that message. He's being very consistent in what he's saying. Okay, now emphasize these words. The Jews had heard nothing about him, and that's true, but they do want to hear from him. We'd like to hear what you've got to say about this. They did acknowledge something, did they not? This will be in the end of verse 21. What had they heard about, Albert? Yes. They call it a sect. We've heard about it. It's reported everywhere, and that you're involved in this somehow. So we want to hear from you. So Paul calls them. They have no news to share with him, but they say we would like to hear from you. In verse 22, this way or this sect is known to us that it is spoken against everywhere. So already you see, do they have any sympathies toward the sect? No, they're not in favor of it either. Just like all the other Jews. But they do want to hear what Paul's got to say. And that's fair. So the Jews came in large numbers, it says in verse 23. They come to Paul's quarters, and Paul's going to address them. Now look at how Luke describes his address, the last part of verse 23. What does he say, or how does Luke write or record that Paul makes his speech? What does he do, according to Luke? All right, he talks from morning to evening. Does he say one word about his own personal condition? He says nothing about it. He doesn't say again, "Now here's why I am where I am today." No, he's using this as a platform to preach. He's going to do what? He's going to testify as a witness concerning who? Jesus. And what does he use as his proof? The law and the prophets. Now, does one have to only use the New Testament to prove the identity of Jesus as the Son of God? You can use that. But what else can you use? You can use the law and the prophets. That's what they had to use because they didn't have the New Testament yet. I mean, letters have been written, yes, But the Scripture, the Old Testament Scripture, certainly proves the identity of Jesus as the Messiah. Pardon? Yes, that's what Philip used with the eunuch in Acts chapter 8. Very good. Okay, so he makes he's preaching, persuading them, trying to persuade them about Jesus and also about the kingdom, it says in verse 23, about the church, the kingdom of God. So he spoke from morning until evening on these great truths, the kingdom and Jesus as the Christ, using the law and the prophets. Well, what results did he get? Mixed, all right? It says some were persuaded. Some of these Jews believed. And had Paul been with Jews before in his travels that believed? Yes, he had gone through some of that. But as Bernie says, it's mixed. What about the other half? Man didn't go for that. Now, some were persuaded and the others would not believe. Now, whatever the proportions were, we don't know. It doesn't say even words like only a few, but many. It just says, it just some. Some were being persuaded, but others would not. So when Paul sees that they could not agree, verse 25, they began to leave. But Paul had one more parting word for them. And what does he say? Or rather, who does he quote? He quotes Isaiah. This will be chapter 6, verses 9 and 10 of Isaiah's prophecy. And someone else has quoted this passage before that we could read. Jesus quotes it in Matthew, the 15th chapter, about those who have eyes but cannot see and ears but they cannot hear. And so Paul quotes this and applies it, he says, in verse 25, the Holy Spirit rightly spoke through Isaiah the prophet to your fathers. And that's what they've done in their rejection of Jesus. And really what Paul is saying, you're being guilty of the very same thing that your forefathers did, your ancestor did. You're rejecting the Messiah. And Paul then says in verse 28, because you're rejecting this salvation, who does he mention again? It's going to be available to the Gentiles. Available to the Gentiles. Who will? So Paul commends the Gentiles who are more willing to hear and to listen than these Jews. And how often has Paul come across that mindset in his travels? Remember? When he and Barnabas even said, from now, your blood be upon your own head, we turn now to the Gentiles. They were much more receptive, much more willing to accept the gospel than the Jews were. So up to the very end of the second treatise, Luke's second record here, we see the same mindset on behalf of the Jews. Some accepted it, received it, others rejected it. And so they left. You see there in verse 29, he has spoken this parting word. The Jews had a great dispute amongst themselves. So you just could see them going out the door, arguing back and forth one with another over what Paul had said. I believe him. I don't. He's right. He's wrong. That's so. It can't be so. I mean, you just can hear what they were saying. Now, how does Luke bring the second treatise to a close? There's just some simple comments, verses 30 and 31. How long did this last, this stay in Rome? It lasts 2 years. Paul's allowed to stay in his own rented quarters, but he has some amenities. He could receive any who would come to him. And we'll see in the again in the Philippian letter, the Philippians sent relief to Paul. They sent a gift to Paul, brought by Epaphroditus. So Paul could receive things from brethren. He could receive actual visitors. And he preached with all openness, Luke writes, and he was unhindered. So again, we make the point. No doubt Paul thought, when I get to Rome, I'm going to be able to roam about and walk the city and talk to people maybe in the marketplaces and go to the churches and all this business. He can't do any of that. But what about his preaching, as Luke writes it? Was his preaching hindered? Paul was physically hindered. But see, you can't chain the gospel message. It's going to have free course. Okay. Boy, we've covered the chapters, I'm telling you. Now we have 7 classes left. There'll be no class, of course, this Wednesday because of our singing. So we've got 7 classes left in November. And we have 4 letters to summarize. We'll do Ephesians, and then Colossians, and then Philemon. You have those 3 this morning. And I'll try to get the Philippian letter written this week, or the Philippian lesson written this week, get that to you next Sunday. And then that'll be our material for the month of November. And then we will have covered, in 9 months, we'll cover the Gospel of Luke, Acts, and the 10 letters that Paul wrote on the journeys. Okay. Thank you for your participation. If you did not get the new material, lessons 59 through 61, we have it right here. You'll need it for next Sunday. Thank you.